Welcome to Burning the Ships, and I'm your host, Jason Seward. Today, I've got my really good friend, Mr. Josh Dixon, on the show. Josh is someone that I have known for several years now. Become very close to him. He's in Nashville, Tennessee, so we don't get to see each other as much as we would like, other than at some mastermind events and stuff like that. But grown to love Josh, love his family, love everything he's about, his values, and what he's doing in the construction and real estate game, and just as a human being. The first time I met Josh, I can't remember exactly where we were. I think we were in Chicago at a real estate meetup, and right away, just talking to him. I mean, we talked a little bit about real estate, but the bulk of the conversation went around his kids, his family, and you'll hear in the interview that he's got a very large family, but just his passion around all of those things. And actually, first time I met him was on a small getaway that we had, like a small group mastermind of like 20 people down in Charleston, South Carolina. So I got to really connect with him down there. But he's very emotionally tied to his family, his legacy, what he's building, the impact he's having as an investor and just as a human being, all those things. So before I introduce him a little bit further, I'm going to give you all JJ's joke of the week, and let's roll with that. JJ's joke of the week. How do you make an octopus laugh? With tentacles. Tentacles. Very good, JJ. That is JJ's joke of the week. So a little bit more about Josh. So Josh, as you'll hear in the interview, he's got 8 kids. And that, you know, I need to have Josh's wife on here to really get the onion peeled back on that a little bit, because that could be an episode on its own, how she manages that, how they manage it as a couple and a family, but, you know, at the same time still are able to accomplish and do so much in their careers and what they're doing. Josh is a real estate, you know, he's a contractor. He's got his hands in a lot of things, but he cut his teeth early on, and you'll hear him elaborate on it. But his family, his uncle and his father, had a construction company. And Josh, from a very early age, was on the job sites. They had the foresight to put him, like, hands-on, really being involved with every phase of the construction process. So by the time he was an early teenager, he could do just about every step of a construction project, knew it in and out, and then continue to learn, and then ultimately ended up starting and building his own business within the construction world. So he's done everything from new construction, custom homes, spec homes. He has flipped a lot of houses, a lot of rentals, and now he has really leaned in heavily in the last several years and into multifamily construction, townhome construction. So he's got, you know, what's unique about his business, and he'll talk about it more, but they're able to do, I mean, they're out of Nashville, but they're licensed in several states that border Tennessee and up and down the East Coast, and looking to add more to that. But they have a unique approach to how they partner with folks. They have several options they can look at, but how they partner with folks and take down these multi-unit townhome new construction builds. So he'll get into that more, but he has some very big goals with this. He's on track to hit them. We're, you know, here, Bill and I are, you know, soon gonna, I've already looked at doing one project with them that fell through, just some zoning and permitting issues, but eventually we will soon be doing a project with Josh as well. But the way he is structured and the way he does everything, right there based out of Nashville, Tennessee, but he's doing projects in Georgia and South Carolina, hopefully Virginia soon, and North Carolina, and he's kind of all over the place with his reach, but he has a very good product that he brings to the market, a very good core value set. Like, he is the definition of value. Like, he's only going to do business with people that he shares in the same values and ethics and morals and stuff like that. That means more to him than the bottom dollar. So I have absolutely loved and feel blessed to have gotten to know Josh and his family over the last couple of years, and excited to continue that growth and our relationship and in and outside of business. He's just a great individual, great human being. So without further ado, we're going to turn it over to my conversation with Mr. Josh Dixon. Hope y'all enjoy. Josh Dixon, welcome to Burning the Ships, my man.
What's up, buddy?
Not much. You are fresh off the Hawaiian Islands, aren't you?
Fresh off Hawaii, ready to go back.
Yeah, yeah. What, y'all were there for the Legacy event. You took the whole crew, didn't you?
Yeah, we took, my oldest daughter was supposed to come, her and her husband. They ended up not coming last minute, but yeah, took all the rest of her kids, her nanny, her husband. We just made a big trip out of it, something we've been planning for about 10 years anyway.
Yeah.
So when the Legacy was like, we're going there, I'm like, hey, it's tax deductible now. Let's get
out. There you go. I love it, man. And I will come back to that because I'm kind of teasing a little bit with your kids, but I'm going to hold off the reveal there because you've got an interesting story with your family dynamic and stuff like that. But before we get into all that, I just want to turn it over to you. Well, I'll kind of preface it with, you know, you and I have gotten to know each other through that group, Legacy Family. We've both been in it for some time now. And grown a good friendship outside of that. And, you know, and I've been wanting to get you on here, since we started the podcast, and I'm glad it finally worked out with our schedules, but I'm just going to turn it over to you and let you introduce yourself to the folks and, kind of tell your story in any way you want. Then we'll go from there.
Yeah. So Josh Dixon, outside of Nashville, Tennessee, the farm that I live on is not much of a farm anymore. It was at one time, but the portion I got's been in my mom's side of the family for like 8 generations. So just been here a long time. I grew up in construction. My uncles and my dad, side of the family always built, did excavation, demo. My mom's side of the family was always brick block masons. And then my stepdad, same thing. He did a lot of commercial, you know, $7 million remodel on a church or something, a lot of bigger stuff like that. We've done everything from single family to storage units to multifamily, doctor's offices, nursing homes, nothing on a grand scale, but you know, anything in that couple million or less range, you know, is mainly where we've been. Some of our jobs are well over that, but you know, it's broken to little sections a lot of time, or we'll build maybe one building's worth $1 million or $2 million, and we may string 3 or 4 of those together.
Right.
Not a huge, huge company, but we've grown quite a bit. My dad wanted me to go to college, so I'd always wanted to build ever since I was a kid. I knew this is what I wanted to do, but he asked me to at least try it, so I went to school for civil engineering. Had really good grades, but I just didn't want to sit behind a desk. I did some job shadowing. And these guys would get to go out like maybe once every couple weeks, once a month, you know, check on a job. And I just knew that, like, that's just not for me.
So, like, you knew that at a very early age, it sounds like, that.
Yeah, I knew that. I knew what I wanted from, I mean, I started working for my uncles. Of course, I was born. I mean, I can remember being on a job site when I was 4. You know, that's the first memory of it. My dad actually used to take me, he said, when I was a kid. You know, he'd have to take me to work. He'd put me in a car seat, you know, give me a bottle. So, I mean, I've literally always been on a job site, but I started working for my uncles when I was 10. And it wasn't just like, hey, I'm here to make a couple of bucks. It was like, I'm here to learn. I want to be the best that I can be. So I quit college at 19. I only went about a semester and a half, and I knew this, it was a waste. Went back to my uncle. My dad had got out. He said he had too many kids. So went back to my uncle. I'd started working for one uncle at 10 and went to my other uncle about 12. 19, I quit college, and I showed up on the job one day. I said, I'm done with college. I'm going to take over the business. He's like, that's a dumb idea. Let's get to work. And I was writing checks. You know, he was working out of town. I was running subs at a very early age because he would put me with like a plumber and say, hey, go learn everything you can. If you can't fire that guy and finish his job, then you don't need to be a contractor. So I was very blessed to be able to understand several different aspects pretty in depth. You know, I'm a state licensed plumber. I could have went and got my electrical license. I've wired tons of houses, but we didn't. But we handled everything in the beginning. Then we just grew to the point that we couldn't. 08, things got slow. He had done some investments in Costa Rica. I had a bunch of apartments. Long story short, he slowed up. And I'm like, I could starve on my own. I had a few kids at this point. So I jumped ship. I was working at a factory. I'd work 10 hours. I go in at 4:30 in the evening, get off at 2:30 in the morning, go home, sleep a few hours, then I go do construction the day.
Yeah, I didn't know this part of the story. I didn't know it was a point you went back to work or like.
Yeah, so I'd sold one of my houses that I personally lived in. We wasn't in a bind, but I told my wife, I was like, I don't want to get in a bind. Let's just sell. So we put a little money in her pocket, thought we was rolling. We had $15,000. We bought everybody's steaks, you know, and we had 45 acres paid for. Just felt like it was, you know, top of the world, but I didn't want to go through our savings. So I was working 58 hours a week, 10 hours, and then an 8 hour on a Saturday for $8.40 an hour. And I did that for several months while I made sure that I had enough business. So, you know, I was working 100 hour weeks just going. And then after, you know, maybe 6 months, 5 months, I don't know how long it was, felt like forever, you know, at the time, we jumped ship and we've never looked back, you know, so we've just scaled from there.
I think it's pretty interesting whether, I mean, I would imagine you talked about your dad and your uncle kind of putting you at an early age in those environments to learn everything. Were they doing that? Do y'all talk about it now, but was he doing that with the foresight of, I want him to learn every aspect of this, or were you just needed in certain areas that just worked out that way?
I think it's probably a combination of both. My dad's side of the family is very figure it out. Like when I was a kid, we always had a junky mower. And I'd be like, Dad would be like, go mow the yard. I'm like, well, it won't crank. And he's like, it's got to have gas and it's got to have fire. Figure it out. And that's just the way it was. Right? They always let you learn the hard way mentality. If you had a question, I mean, it's not that they wouldn't answer, but they just wasn't very like, let me show you how to do this. Mm-hmm. But I think my uncle did have the foresight of like, he needs to understand the aspects. There was times that a sub needed me. No doubt that I filled that gap, but, you know, it got to the point that I feel like I was a really good worker. So even on the weekends when the subs had side jobs or not side jobs to them, they would hire me to go with them. So, or in the evening. So I think it was a combination of both, some foresight. He always wanted good for me.
Right.
And he wanted me to be able to understand the job and it worked out for him and the.
Gotcha. So in 08, you go through that, you got to go to get a job to keep things floating. You did that for several months and then you jump ship and now y'all haven't looked back. So what did it look like at that point? What was the business? Were you doing remodels? Were you doing new construction, spec homes? What were you doing?
Yeah. In the beginning, it was just whatever I could, you know, so mainly roofing, just because I could make $500 to $1,000 a day roofing. I would get up at daylight, start packing the tools. I got a group of guys that didn't know anything about roofing, really. Maybe one of them being my brother. And we would go in, like I would chalk every line vertical sideways, and it was basically dummy proof. I had two nail guns. When that one run out of nails, I'd hand it to the guy and say, load that up. And I basically just did that. The guys would go home. I'd spend my evenings unloading shingles, and that was the only way I could get started. And then as we started doing some remodels, very shortly after we got our first house spec or custom home to build. We just started working up our clientele. Then people started hearing about us. And then it's always been word of mouth from that point on, you know, a lot of repeat customers. We probably ran that way for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, I guess. And then I bought my first flip home. And I was like, this is the craziest. No, actually, I built my first spec home. And I built a spec. My uncle was doing a subdivision. He was back up and cranking by that time. So I bought a few lots off of him. We did our first spec home. I did okay, but I was like, I could make more money working for clients than I can doing this. So at that point, I sat down and I drew out my spec homes on paper. I laid out every stud. I counted how many nails it would take, you know, if you put, and I really narrowed it down to where I knew where my money was at. Mm-hmm. And then I did our first flip and bought that for like $20,000. It was right beside a nudist colony. I didn't know it when I bought it, but when I found out, I'm like, I'm never going to be able to sell this thing.
Were you out there working one day and that's how you found out? Or
somebody just told me it had a big rock at the end of their driveway, so you couldn't see it, but it was like Bear Lane, but it wasn't like the grizzly bears felling, you know, and I never called it. We bought that one for $20,000, and it was so rough. I remember telling my wife, she's like, why are you so worried? I'm like, nobody's going to want to rent a $20,000 house. And then the renters that I'm going to have are going to be like, not the renters I want, you know. We started working on it 2 weeks later. I sold it for $55,000. And I'm like, I'm on to something. Because I've been doing a lot of flipping for bankers and investors at that point. And what all these guys have is money. That's the only thing I don't have is the money.
Right.
So we took a chance on that one. And then we to put all that cash back in. Then we went into flipping real heavy after that. And I got to where we was flipping several houses a year. I was on site doing it. We were still doing our custom work. So basically the custom just kept all the bills paid and the flips were just stacking money for more and more investments. Then we got to where we started back in the housing market, really started cranking. We started doing specs again. And by that time I've been working in the background, you know, what would it take? I'm drawing blueprints and figuring out as efficiently as I could build and still have a really good product. We still had granite countertops, all number 12 wire, Avantec floors. So a good product. And we got to where we was averaging probably $100,000 a house.
Wow. Yeah.
So sometimes 80, sometimes 120 plus, but, you know, consistently. So I kind of got into rinse and repeat. I'm like, we just got to do this 10 times to make a million, 20 times to make 2 million. We ran that for really up until just the last couple of years. And then we got into legacy. Of course, I spent a year just feeling like I needed to be doing what you're doing. Okay, I got to figure out how to raise capital, or I got to figure out how to do a trailer park, or I got RV park. And then probably a year and a half ago, I was like, we're doing what we do, we're going to build. And the best asset class I'd found at that time was townhomes. We had built a few for some clients. And I just really love the exit on it. I love the stability of it. I love the safety net of it. And it was just a low risk, high reward, and it was repeatable, scalable. And so we just went all in. We're finishing our last two customs up now. As soon as we get those done, basically, not saying we won't take some one-offs, but it'd be hard to pull me away.
Yeah, and I want to go down that rabbit hole in a little bit. I want to go back a little bit first, though. So, you know, you're building, you said several years building these spec houses, and it's just cookie cutter. You're doing it, making $100,000, you know, a pop. Yep. While you were in those years and cranking those out, was it lingering in the back of your mind, like, I've got to have a bigger vision, or were you just in the weeds, like in the picture, not zoomed out? Like, I'm just curious what your mindset was. Like, I'm just going to run until it dries up, or I'm going to get bigger.
Yeah. I'd always said, even back then, you know, I had set goals. I wanted to be a millionaire by 30, 35. I wanted to be so far by these. And so I always had a goal to get bigger. I didn't really have a plan. So, like, my plan at that time was like, hey, I got to figure out how to flip more houses and find more lots, you know, just like a farmer, you got to have more land to do more crops. So that was my only mindset, is like nothing planned out, shooting from the hip, going to auctions, spending all my free time. Like, I'd never have had any hobbies. It's just work and I enjoyed it, you know? So looking for land, talking to people, I got to where I was doing it so much that people would call me, hey, my grandpa passed away and he's got this property, would you be interested? Or, hey, I got this piece of land, would you be interested in it? And I go look at it, see if I could track it up. If I had all the, I got on the planning committee locally, So I kind of helped me keep a pulse on everything that was going on in the county, but it also taught me a lot about taking a piece of property through entitlement.
Right.
You know, because I've watched tons of properties go through all this process. And so that really opened me up probably more than anything. And the opportunities that I took with the spec homes to give me the cash to go buy a piece of land, be able to ride that out for a few months while I entitled it, and then exit on that or build it out to exit.
Right.
So I didn't really get that mindset until probably a year and a half to 2 years before I joined the group. I actually started with Sean Whalen, his online thing. And I guess what really clicked is, you know, he's on there telling everybody they need to be a coach. I love teaching people, but I was like, man, this guy's got 3,000-4,000 people on his group. They're paying him $300 a month. You know, he's shooting from the hip on a call one day a week for 1 hour, 4 hours a month, and he's making in $1 million, $1.2 million. And then I just something clicked, the scalability of just thinking, and what I was doing was not scalable without a huge team. And I didn't want to build a huge team. So like I spent a lot of time just really analyzing, cutting the fat off all the different ways to do things. And even now, like I don't want to do huge developments. I have a very specific niche I want to be in when we're building townhomes. And I was following him. That's how I found Mark Evans and eventually led me to Tim.
Yeah.
Sat on the fence for maybe 6 months and then met you at the island. That was my very first thing I'd ever done with the group.
Okay.
And then we met there, and then that really, my brain was already turning, and it just put me in the right rooms to really think outside the box, I believe.
I find, like, there's one thing that I know about you that is unique in, like, the niche that you're in, because my whole career I've dealt with contractors and know a lot of very successful contractors, but most of them fall into this, like, head down, do what I'm doing, and they don't really zoom out and look at the big picture, right? So as the money's coming in, it's going out just as fast. You know, their lifestyle follows the year that they're in and the income that they're living. But you seem to have been able to, like, you made hay when the sun was shining, but you didn't use all that hay, and you kept, you know, some gunpowder in reserve so you could be ready. It sounds like you didn't know what it would be. You didn't have quite the vision. You had the goals, but you didn't have the plan. So you didn't have it all mapped out, but you knew you would find it, and you kept enough, again, gunpowder in storage to jump on these opportunities as they come up. Is that pretty accurate?
100%. I still do that today. I mean, I pay my wife $1,250 every week.
Mm-hmm.
And if we need something beyond that, you know, we can pull some money out of a savings or investment. But I've always had that mentality. And we've always just said, this is what we're going to live off of. And it's worked out, because I know that when that opportunity comes, I don't want to have that regret of not being able to have the funds to jump on it. It's still to this day, I don't think I'll ever get past that.
Yeah. And I think what it has done from my perspective of just, you know, getting to know you as I have, well, number one, let's go back about, I don't know, a year and a half or so ago, I remember having a long conversation with you. I was on my porch and we were just talking about, you were trying to wrestle with, like, I can keep doing what I'm doing, building these customs, building these spec homes. And it's great, but it's one transaction after the other. I'm technically working for someone else, the clients, and you were just trying to, like, get rid of some of that blurriness you had around, like, how do I get out of that and more. And I didn't have much advice for you, just other than just figure it out, you know, like keep building relationships and stuff. But now, fast forward, that was probably 2 years ago, but fast forward to now, you have started figuring it out and you have implemented, and now it's not as blurry. You see a vision, the one thing you can focus on. But let's talk about that, like specifically what you have evolved into now, because I think a lot of my listeners are real estate investors. They're always looking for creative ways to do things. You have a very unique approach. You're not just a builder, but you're also looking for partnerships through what you do. So why don't you speak to kind of what you're focused on now and what your motto is, and then we'll go from there.
Yes. So we're focused on townhomes. If you read the back of this shirt, it says I build townhomes. And that's what I'm trying to brand myself is. When somebody's like, what's he do? It's like, oh, he builds townhomes. And the reason is because, you know, I want to keep homing in and getting even better and better at what I do. And I find that the more focused I get, the more transactions I get, the more traction I get. And with the townhomes, you know, our focus was, okay, we're going to go into multifamily. What a lot of people in the groups we hang around is doing the multifamily, but I knew I didn't want to manage, like I'd managed my uncle's stuff and worked on that stuff. And I didn't want to go to D class and C class. And I watched them struggle. Like they just started building when they were young, but it was always, you know, always a payment and they was always have to go fix a toilet. They was going. So I knew that when I did it, that I wanted to wait till I had enough cash that I could bring in some kind of, I didn't want to get caught up in managing them. So we looked at all the asset classes. Apartments were great, but I like to learn from people's mistakes and not like I'll help them, but like, I've never been one like, oh, I'm going to learn it for myself. It's like, no, you show me somebody failing and I'm going to be like, all right, I'll remember that. Cause I don't want to touch that fire. Well, in 08, my uncles had these apartments and they wanted to sell them. They got in a bind and the bank almost took them to the point my uncle was like, hey, come get them. Like, he had had them for years at this point. And they're like, no, we don't want that big of a problem, you know. And he was so, not big comparatively, but he was so big for our community that nobody, the banks didn't want to take them back.
Right.
So that being said, he couldn't sell them because it was millions of dollars on an exit for somebody to buy them. Nobody had that kind of money. The people that did have that kind of money were smart with money.
Right.
And they were looking for blood in the streets, you know, and they weren't going to give him but pennies on the dollar of what these things was worth. So he wrote it out and it all worked out really well for him. But for me, I did not want to be, I don't owe anybody anything. I will go and borrow money, but it's usually short terms or I see a vision. As we're scaling into these bigger things, I'll have to go back to borrow money, but I never wanted to be slave to that much debt. So with the townhomes, you know, we zero lot line them. We have it to where we can set an HOA in place. So if I need to shed some, I don't have to shed 100 units. I can shed one unit, two units. Another thing it does is, when I'm selling to a big investor like Brotts or somebody, you know, they're looking at that 1% rule or whatever it may be. So if that's renting for $1,500 a month, you know, they're going to give me $150,000, probably could get $180,000, $90,000 a door. But if I sell that to the end buyer, an individual, that raises it to $225,000 to $250,000 a door, some areas $300,000. But my exit goes up. So you take 25 units and you up your exit by $50,000, you know, you're in the millions range now. So, and also in zero lot line them, we put all the utilities individual. So I'm not chasing people, you know, hey, that's your problem. You pay your water, you pay your sewer.
Right.
And really want to make a really nice place for people to live. I don't want to manage them and then have my, you know, I can lease to own it. I can rent it. I can sell it to a big development or I can sell them individually. And if I get stuck with them, I know that I'm building them cheap enough that I'm doing way better than the 1% rule.
Right.
So the next hurdle was for me, I started paying a lot of taxes. So I was like, how am I going to overcome this hurdle? You know, cause I was turning and burning and cause I don't want to manage. So I was like, how am I going to overcome this? So what we've done is, you've always heard the saying, if you help other people, you can have anything you want if you help other people enough. So I was like, what can we do? So our model is now if we find a really good operator, we've got a set rate pretty cheap, you know, we're coming in, building them at a just as cheap as we can, have a good product and not charge. And then they have to manage it. And we get long-term partnership in the deal, 50-50.
Yeah.
We'll do a contractor carry back to where if somebody wants to come in and they want to run the deal, they can't get the 20% down, or they can only get part of it. They can come to somebody like you, get a bridge loan maybe, or, and then I'm carrying the contractor carry back, and they're just paying me interest on my money. So I'm not getting that big lump and just paying half of it. And that gives me time to go defer that money somewhere else.
Yeah.
And then the other option is we have some people that just come in and they were like, we just want a clean slate. They'll pay us their percentage on the deal. We walk away. But then now as we're partnering with other people on bigger developments, that gives us the depreciation to offset what we make. So, you know, we're still honing all that in, but that's kind of a high level of what we're shooting for.
Yeah. And I think it's a lot of like very relevant points from a time standpoint. So like right now with the market, anybody in real estate knows that there's a housing shortage, right? And it's going to be that way for a handful of years. And so the build to rent model is fantastic because the demand requires it. Like it requires that supply. So where you get to come in and we, you know, we're working on trying to find a deal to do together. And we had one under contract last year that it just didn't work out from a location standpoint, but it's beautiful for both sides. So I'm, as an operator, my weak link is construction. So I've always, you know, doing single family, small multifamily, we've always had to hire that out, right? So the idea of building to rent is intimidating in the sense is I don't want to run the construction, right? So that's where you can, somebody like you can come in and what you need is an operator that wants to manage them, right? So we can take care of that. You can bring the construction knowledge, expertise, the expertise with dealing with localities and entitlements and all that stuff that I know nothing about. And then to your point, there's several different options. One, which we were looking at, is let's build 100 of them and let's sell 30% of them and offset those gains by a cost segregation to, you know, take the tax benefits, and you build them, get them up and done. They're occupied. You're out. Now you have a passive investment while we operate them. And it's a beautiful model for folks that are in similar situations as us where we just don't know where to start with that big of a construction project. So I think it's, and you're hitting it at a perfect time when there's such a demand for this type of product, you know?
And, yeah, there's a lot of people that want to get into the game, you know, and they don't know how.
Yeah.
And so my thing was, how can I make it so good that they feel crazy not to partner?
Right.
So if we started at a 25 unit, it's kind of our low point of where we like to start because it just costs to travel, you know.
Right.
We're doing multiple states. So if we could hit 25, that's pretty, anybody that's ready for something like this, they can handle 25 units. And it opens up, you know, people that normally couldn't get into something like this, a big opportunity, in my opinion.
Yep.
And so if we can keep giving them everything that makes it easier on them, and they're like, we're crazy for not doing this deal, we're making them money real fast because these things are appraising as soon as we're done for good returns. And then they're making us their long-term wealth, you know, by operating this thing out.
Yeah. It's a beautiful model, man. And I know you're just kind of like you're cranking it up now. You're branding it. You're blowing it out there. So hopefully this can get on some people's radars as well. And I know also you're not just going to work with anybody. So like there is a vetting process. It's not, you know, John Doe calling you up, say, hey, I got 15 acres. Let's build townhomes. You're going to want to build a relationship and vet that out. But that's part of any big deal, right? You don't just jump in bed with a stranger in this world. So I think there's, you know, and I love the idea because I know you're a big goal guy, but now you got a vision and you got a path, and you combine those two things. I was talking on a podcast recently. Oh, I had Dano from Dano's Seasoning on, and he was talking about this. He's like, if you have a good product, and you have good culture and you combine those two things, that everything else will, you know, as long as you sustain it, and you've got that. And you mentioned earlier that you said the word cheap. You're not building cheap quality. It's cheap in the sense of y'all have nailed it down to be so efficient, and the floor plans and all the construction aspects are so efficient that it keeps the cost down, but you're putting a very quality product out there. I've seen what you build. So you're providing affordable housing in a lot of these areas, right? These two bed, one baths, two twos, stuff like that. And you're solving a need for locations, counties, cities, because they need affordable housing, but you're giving a great product to somebody that's either renting or buying this thing. So it's not cheap by any means. So
Yeah. So I mean, we would calculate things like, I would figure out my floor joist. You know, everybody got big into the I-joists for a while, but I could use a 2x12, which is a phenomenal floor system. If I laid out my dimensions and my piers correctly, I could use that, and it was saving me $4,000 a house and a better product.
Right.
And so things like that, trusses, you know, buying high quality lumber, stick framing them, the difference between the truss package and the crane truck, you know, there's another $3,000 to $6,000. So just little moves like that, that actually were really more site built things, really moved the needle on the exit.
Right. So let me, and I'm sure a lot of people listening are thinking this, because I remember when you and I were first talking about this a while ago, I was thinking the same thing, and we worked through all this, but explain to folks how you manage this efficiently living in Nashville, Tennessee. So like the one we were looking at is in Hampton Roads, Virginia. So we're a long ways away from you. It's not like you're driving over to the job site every day. So what's your structure and all your systems that you have in place to manage these things at a distance?
Yep. So that's always going to be, like everything else, evolving. We're get better at it. I believe every week we're thinking of different things. As of right now, the way we've managed to do it is, one, I brought in my partner, which is my brother. He spent the last 7 years, they've been building like Starbucks, McAllister, shrimp baskets, a lot of restaurants, some vet clinics, different things like that. So he has got a really good Rolodex. You know, they were building anything that touched Tennessee, basically, like what we're doing now, they were building those states. So he's got a really good Rolodex of guys in these areas already.
Yeah.
And we're looking for guys that are kind of like regional. So a lot of your electricians, plumbers and stuff, they're going to handle these two states,
right,
you know.
Right.
And so the first line of defense is, I go look at the job. I'm talking to you, making sure, looking at a high level, getting everything worked out. Then my brother is going to look at that.
Excuse me.
Nate, our admin guy, is behind the scenes coordinating everything. My brother is he's the guy, he's out there on all the jobs visiting them. And then we'll have a project manager that's in-house that's working on that. We're getting to where we're putting up camera systems so we can monitor things. But a lot of the stuff is ran from here. We can pick up the phone. We can call the inspectors. We can do a lot of that from anywhere. And then we send some of our sub crews down there. You know, my son's down there right now. Him and a buddy are laying floors, you know. They can lay 1,100 square foot apartment in 3.5 hours.
Right.
And they're just cranking it. So eventually we want to bring everything in-house. And we're systematically going to do that.
Yeah. No.
Right now, if we use the people, we use the people at our Rolodex. And then if we can't find somebody, we're going to call, if we need a drywaller, we're going to call the drywall company. Hey, send us your three best drywallers to buy from you. They're going to, you know, wolf the job. They're going to send us the best. We're going to vet those guys, get good contracts. And then we've done it enough. You know, you can watch the guys and you can tell whether they're good. And then if they don't operate well, you just fire them.
Right. Right. Yeah. I think, and it's not, it's not something like you're past the kind of pilot stage of this. Like you've got projects that have gone to completion with this model. So it's not like you're throwing something at a wall, seeing if it sticks. It's a proven model. So, but I know a lot of folks, myself included early on when I was hearing you talk about it, I was like, man, that's a big project to manage from Nashville. So, I want to ask you, I already knew the answer, but I want to ask you and I can speak from experience because I got to kind of see behind the scenes as we were working through planning our deal. You've got it buttoned up. I mean, you know, and that's another piece of this, like another hurdle that can be intimidating, right? Like I can go out and find a good piece of land, right? And I can negotiate that and try to get it under contract. But then a lot of these, if you get a good deal, it's probably going to be some adversity getting it approved with the county the way it needs to be zoned and stuff like that. Well, that's where you guys can come in from your experience. Like in our case, you sat on one call with our like local board members and stuff like that. And within 5 minutes, you knew this wasn't a good deal because you knew we were going to have an uphill battle. So your experience coming to the table as a part of that is also very valuable. So I love everything about it. Let's shift gears a little bit, and I want to wrap it up on some fun stuff. So I mentioned earlier, you just got back from Hawaii with your kids and wife. How many kids do you have, Josh?
I have 8 kids.
Let's go. So
4 boys and 4 girls.
So I want everybody to take that in for a minute. He just laid out kind of a timeline of being a 19-year-old kid himself, jumping on the job sites and building this company over all the years. But he was doing so while building a mega family of 8 kids and a superstar wife. So let's talk about y'all's family dynamic, you know, how you've been able to, the good and the bad if you want, but how you've been able to balance a growing business with a very large family, a spouse and all that comes along with that.
Yeah. They don't come with instruction manuals.
Nope.
So I can't tell you if we're putting the parts together correctly or not, but for us, you know, my wife wanted a bunch of kids, or she wanted kids. I wasn't really for sure. She's like, I don't remember this part, but I was like, I just didn't want to screw a kid up, you know. My parents had split up, and I just didn't feel like I would be that great at it. Fast forward, we had our first kid. I was like, sure, we'll have a kid, you know. And I said I'd have up to 7, but I wanted them to be, I guess 7's my lucky number. I liked it. I don't know. But I said I want them to be back-to-back, because I want to do it while I'm younger and I've got the energy to raise them, and I want them to be like raised together. So we had number 7 and then thought we was done. And then we had 8 and I was like, all right. And you know, I don't know that I would have stopped there other than the fact we did want to be real intentional. Like that's probably my main focus is just to be intentional with each kid. Never wanted them to feel like they was different because they was from a large family. You know, still want to be able to take them on vacations. And that looked different years ago.
Yep.
You know, and maybe it was camping. Maybe it was going to the mountains in Gatlinburg, something cheaper, you know. There was times that we wanted to get away and we didn't have the money. We would just go find a hotel that was relatively nice that had a pool.
Right.
You know, we just take the kids for the weekend to the pool, whatever. Just being intentional about it. But we've never made them work in the business. If I really need it, I'm like, hey guys, I need you to come help me do something. But we always gave them that opportunity. So that's always been good. They've always been, when I did a closing, when I was buying a property, I'm taking kids with me. I want them to see it. I can remember being at my first closing, shaking, hand sweating. And so I just want all this to be second nature for them.
Yeah. Right.
And my main thing is I'm like, hey, whatever you want to do, do it. But if you want some advice, start buying you some rentals, but do that till you're 30 and then you can do whatever you want the rest of your life. And, you know, my oldest daughter, her husband works for us. My oldest son, he's 17. They're laying, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he does over 100 and something floors this year. So he's got a pretty good down payment on a duplex or a quadruplex.
Mm-hmm.
But we've just tried to encourage them to be entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
She was homeschooled. I was public schooled. Nothing wrong with either one. As long as you're intentional, both are fine. But for me, I just saw the benefits of like, I studied before we did this, you know, I studied the best schools in the world at that time and how they operated. And they operated so much differently than we did here. And I just really liked it. You know, they were raising that kid to whatever they wanted to do. That was what their schooling revolved around. Yep. And I just saw a better path than that. And then the hurdle was, we didn't want them to not be, you know, everybody's like, oh, they're not socialized. They're not socialized. But I have family members that were homeschooled that are super social. And I have family members that were public schooled that are antisocial. Yep. So I knew that that wasn't the case. It's all about each kid, the individuality, being intentional. So we just try to cultivate what they enjoy, and we mess up, you know, we're just like everybody else. It's like, oh, the only thing that I can say that I feel like we have done very well is we've tried to be intentional.
Yeah.
Not that we always are, but we've tried to be intentional. I think that's, if we've had any success, you know, that's been what it is, that we, you know, I plant trees. That right now for my, I've planted trees years ago for my grandkids to play in.
Yeah.
You know, those low trees that have the cool limbs, you know. Yeah. So I'm very generational thinking ahead, you know.
I love that.
And I don't know that I'll, hopefully I get to see it, but that's how we operate again.
Yeah. No, I love it. I know you don't remember this, but because it's been a while ago, you and I were on a call. We might have been on a Zoom call talking about this deal I was just referenced, but whatever it was, I think Bill was on there too. One of your sons, you were in a vehicle, you got out for a second, one of your sons walked by, he's like, I can't find this or fix this or whatever. You said, you got to figure it out, buddy, I'm on a phone call. And it's that, you alluded to that with your dad and uncle earlier, like, just figure it out. And you're training these kids the same way. You could go out and solve all of their problems right now with money. Or just doing it for them, and you're choosing not to through that intentionality. But none of that's possible. But as hard of a driver as you are with your business and what you've been doing, like you had a goal with your children to be intentional, and you saw a vision for them, your generational thinking. It doesn't happen without a strong ass wife, and you've got that. So talk about that, because I've gotten to know both of y'all. But one thing that stands out to me about your wife is she's got 8 kids. She's managing a corporation at home, essentially, with you know, you and the kids. But she is so poised, so down to earth, so calm. I mean, she might not be that way behind closed doors, but, you know, it seems that way. So talk about the power of her and how much that's contributed to y'all's success as a family.
Yeah, we couldn't have had a family without. I couldn't have had a family like this if I didn't have a wife that, you know, she chose early in her marriage. You know, I told her, I'm like, if you want to work, before we got married, you know, I was like, if you want to work to have your own money, that's fine. But from a providing standpoint, like, I just feel that that's my duty. Mm-hmm. So I was like, that's up to you. Whatever you want to do, you can contribute, not contribute, but I'll provide. And with us having kids, you know, that has been necessary for her to stay at home. I mean, that just the amount of, you know, she's cooking 3 meals a day. She's homeschooling. She's trying to do, you know, not just teach in a class. She's teaching 8 different classes because they're all in different levels. The cooking the meals, the cleaning the house. And the biggest struggle sometimes is, you know, she has ambitions too. And remembering that, you know, she doesn't want to just, as much as she loves and knows how good it is, she's like anybody else. She's like, she wants to have her own dreams. So trying to balance that, I believe, pretty important. I don't always do a good job, but trying to, like, okay, you know, I know what it's like to be stuck on a job with a bunch of complaining contractors, everybody. She don't get to quit. You know, it's 24/7. So one thing we've done is, and she talked about this at the Hawaii event, was, you know, subbing stuff out. You know, there's things in my business that I can't do it all anymore. And so we've had to subcontract out. So, you know, we went from homeschooling to where we still homeschool, but we got a tutorial that they'll go to some 1 day, some 2 days a week, that that they take all the harder classes and they keep it structured. They keep them tested. Now we still overview it from home, and she still has to do stuff, but she doesn't have to think, okay, what is the curriculum today? So things like that have really helped. And then, you know, we hired a nanny a couple of days a week to come in and just to give her some brain space. But, you know, she's pushed me in the business as well. She's very good, you know, at flipping properties, finding them to flip. She understands the spec house world. So like I could tell her right now, hey, we need a spec house lot or we need a flip. And she would know, hey, I need to go hustle something up.
Right.
And, she has her struggles just like I have her struggles, but we just both made that in the beginning. And it's not always been an easy choice by no means. It'll make you, even if you want to be selfish, if you're a decent human being, you can't be, you know, you're just like, you want to be, but you can't. And that's one of the sacrifices she's had to make is to even when she doesn't want to, she still does it
yeah.
because she knows it's the right thing to do.
Right. And y'all are a great example of, I mean, you've said it, I don't know how many times in the last 45 minutes, but just intentionality. Y'all approach everything that way. And I mean, it's a great, like from a business standpoint, you're a great example of just, you know, evolving and growing and all the things that you would expect out of a good entrepreneur. But a lot of entrepreneurs fail at home, right? And you guys to have that side, and you said it's not always perfect. You probably are failing in some ways, but you're always aware of, let's try to make it better. Let's try to get these kids, you know, into adulthood as good contributors to society, right? And so y'all,
100%.
And that's all you can ask for, you know. As parents, I only have two kids, but it's top of mind constantly of like, am I contributing to their development in a good or a bad way? And if I'm having a bad day and I come home and I'm just moody and snapping at everybody, I don't want them to be that way. Well, they're going to be like me, right? They're going to be like me and my wife. So I got to make sure that I'm setting a good model and a good environment for them to develop in. And y'all are obviously doing that. So, Josh, let's, I could talk to you for hours, but I kind of want to wrap it up so we don't take too much of your time. But where do you envision, you know, I know you're a big goal guy, but do you have like a vision for the next couple years, next 5 years, 10 years? I know you love work, so you're not one of these guys that are thinking in 10 years, I'm going to be retired on a beach. You'll probably always have your hands in it, but what does that vision look like?
Yeah, I think for me right now, we've went all in. Not really looking back. It's all in on townhomes right now. So my goal with that is, I know that if tomorrow everything quit, I could go back to trading on property, build a couple of specs. My family's fine. So that gives me a little freedom of just like, hey, let's just pour into it and give it all we've got. My goal really is for probably the next 1 to 2 years is really just keep honing down on making this thing better, being more efficient and growing if we can, but not outgrowing so fast that we just grow the problems that we have.
Right.
So like, you know, I have a board that we look at consistently every day. I'm talking, how can we do this? How can we get better? And right now, honestly, like with the two customs we have, it drains so much of my mental bandwidth that I'm not as efficient on the business as I want to be. I see a lot at the end of the table, probably 2 months, and that's all gone. But my goal is for the next 2 years to really make this thing like as bulletproof as possible. If I can get to that point, we could probably build 250, 300 pretty easy a year right now. I think, you know, pick up a couple more project managers, but we want to get to 500, maybe more, but if we can do 500 a year with a good operator, and we can do that for 10 years. That's my path to $1 billion holding.
Right.
And that's just kind of the vision, you know, it is a loose vision, but I can mathematically, it's totally achievable,
right?
Totally doable. But I feel like I've got to put in the work on the front end to really make it, where it doesn't take me over. Cause at the end of the day, my kids, my wife, if you ask me, hey, you can have the billion, but you're going to lose your time with them or one of them or anything, you know, it's going to disrupt their future in this kind of way, then I would just pull the plug.
Yep.
But, you know, as long as it doesn't interfere with that, as long as we can keep a good mentality, happy environment, then that's the goal. 2 years of really honing in, and then 10 years of
getting after it.
All right. Yep. This is game time. Let's 500 minimum. If we can go more, then we will. But I think that's where we're at right now.
Yeah, I love that. But I want to add to that, because I know you and I know you're humble. So, you know, there's a couple of things you wouldn't say, but the $1 billion is not about $1 billion to you. It's not about the money at all. It's you. You are wired in a way, two things. You mentioned one earlier, that you're always thinking generationally, right? So if you build that much of a, call it an empire or whatever it is, of property that you're attached to, that's in your portfolio, then that helps your grandkids out, right? So you're setting that up, not in a way that spoils them, but it's just a way to leave a legacy. That's number one. I know that's important to you. Number two, you're wired in a way, you've always got to have a dragon to slay, but right? So this is, you see a vision, you see a path there. Now it turns into this game of, okay, I'm confident I can get there. Let's go do it. And it's not about how much you're putting in your pocket. You're not going to go and have a private jet and all this stuff like that. So the billion means nothing. It's more of a game to you. And I love that about you. So
it's totally a game. It has nothing to do with the money. If it had to do with, you know, money and lifestyle, I just quit right now. Right. But I feel like I got to have a drive. And if I hit that, then I'll be like, okay, well, what are we going to do now? I mean, I'll have to do something, even if it's a totally different spectrum, you know. But yeah, we help, you know, orphanages in Honduras and stuff like that. So, like, just the more you get, the more you can do, and just, you know, you find an opportunity and like, oh yeah, we're going to do it. But I'm 110% okay if we're just right here. You know, it doesn't bother me either way. I it's only the ambition and the drive of wanting to see what I'm capable of.
Yep. And that point you just said, that's been such a driving force in my life, is with me and my wife, where I've been able to take some pretty big risk, primarily leaving a high paying, you know, corporate career to go into other things. But I was able to do it because I wanted to chase this dream. But my wife and I also know that we're just fine. If I've got to go back and just make 50 grand a year, I'll do better than that. But if I had to, we're just fine living in our house on our 20 acres, as happy as we don't ever have to go anywhere. But knowing that gives me the freedom and like the lack of stress to chase something really big, right? And whatever that is, I'm going to always chase it, because that's how my brain works. And you're wired exactly the same way. I love to hear it. One last question. You alluded to, like, you know, the last few years you've really leaned in on these mastermind groups, networking groups and stuff like that. Real quick, how much value has that added to you as a person and you as an entrepreneur?
Yeah. So from a person standpoint, it just opened my brain up so much to like thinking, and not being one of those contractors that just keeps their head down. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know what I didn't know. And I'm glad that I got around people that it's not that I don't want to think bigger, but sometimes you just don't know what's out there. I realized that I love education. I just like education based around things that excite me, you know? So it's grew, my knowledge, it's my confidence getting a room around these guys and being like, hey, I may not be as good at raising money as that guy, but I'm just as good in my class of building 200 to $3 million projects. I'm very honed in on that. Do what I'm good at.
Yeah.
Help me stay in my lane. It's not at first, but it's helped me to quit chasing. You know, the grass isn't greener anywhere. It's green where you water it, you know.
Yeah.
So just staying on that. And then it's opened me up to experiences. You know, I don't know that my kids wouldn't have went to Boston, and, you know, we would have probably took the Hawaii trip, but like we wouldn't be doing some of the things in the culture of just seeing how big of a world's out there.
Yeah.
So it's helped a lot. And then I think you get to the point where, you know, I haven't, there's a couple other high level coaching that I want to do that I anticipate on doing. So I want to continue to grow. But then you get around and you start to find a little core of people like you and me that you just connect with. And, you know, you and me may not talk for 2 months.
Yeah.
If we don't have something come up, but we could sit around a campfire tonight and we could just talk like the first time we met, you know. So you get a core of people and you're like, hey, I want to work with that person. And then you're okay with that. You're fine if you don't ever get more people. You know, you realize how I'm realizing as I'm 42, like how much time is really valued at and how little of it I actually have. So just being real wise with that.
Yeah, it's that time is, I mean, it's cliche, but like it's our most valuable asset. And once it's gone, you ain't getting it back. Like if I lose money, I can go make more money. I can create more time, right? So it is valuable, and you got to treat it with as much respect and discipline and all that stuff as you do money and your finances and stuff like that. So, Josh, it's been a pleasure, man. I mean, you know, it's I'm really, there's a lot of stuff. You have a lot of value. I know you, one of your biggest struggle is you are so humble that you have trouble sharing what you're doing and stuff like that. So I'm excited to hear that you're kind of thinking of leaning towards some coaching opportunities and stuff like that, because you do have a lot of value to share, and I'm glad to see you leaning in on that. I want folks to be able to connect with you if they are interested in learning more about what you do. What's the best way to do that? Through Facebook, email?
Yeah, I guess it'll be ibuildtownhomes.com.
Okay.
We haven't got the page. We just got the domain. But yeah, just reach out to us at Dixon Homes on Instagram.
Yep.
Or Dixon Homes on Facebook.
Yeah, we'll drop all the links in the show notes, and if you don't find it there, just reach out to me if you're listening and want to connect with Josh. I'll make the introduction. But Josh, again, appreciate you taking an hour out of your day. Sorry, I showed up a little late because I had some technical difficulties. I apologize for that. But it's been a real pleasure having you on here. Even more of a pleasure getting to know you over the last couple of years. And I cannot wait to see what we're able to do together, if possible. But just, you know, if I'm not a part of it, just seeing where you go with all this. And I'm very excited to see it, man.
Likewise. Thank you for having me on. Thank you for you and all the guys on your team. It's great to connect with y'all.
Yeah, man.
Appreciate you. I love to see what you're doing. It encourages me, even though it's totally outside my realm, to see other guys. It's like we're all just in the fight, struggle, growing together, and it brings the camaraderie about it somehow.
Yep. It's all good, man, and I love every minute of it. So, Josh, I appreciate your time. Again, we're going to drop all your contact info in the show notes. And appreciate you joining us on Burning the Ships. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Burning the Ships. I want to give a special thanks to our sponsor, 608B Capital, helping real estate investors secure fast, reliable funding to fuel their boldest moves. If you're ready to take your investing to the next level, visit 608bcapital.com to learn more. If you found value in today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast. Your feedback not only helps us improve, but it also helps us reach more people who are ready to burn the ships and commit fully to their goals. And don't forget to share the episode with someone who needs that extra push to take bold action. I'll leave you with this. Burning the ships isn't just about removing the option to retreat. It's about unlocking the courage to charge forward. No matter the odds, the past is behind you and the future is yours to conquer. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time on Burning the Ships.